I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 124 of Internet Marketing. I'm Andy White and I'm with...
Elvin... Right. I don't know why I answered it like that. You know, I felt like I had to. Whenever you say that to me, who am I? I kind of feel like I have to do it in an interesting voice. I could say it's Kelvin.
Kelvin, I think some of the funniest things you do are your very high pitched bye at the end. You must do a very high pitched bye bye at the end of this show.
Well, you know, that's how you've got to say bye bye. You can't just say bye bye. You've got to say bye bye. Or however it is you decide to do it.
Yeah, but we don't want to be accused of being camp again, do we?
No, we have had that, you know, in the past. So yeah, I'll try and lay off the falsetto.
Yeah. Okay, so it's questions and answers today, and we've got four questions on pieces of paper, so you may hear rustling. First one is from Callum Maka. It's a bit of a long one, so you'll have to bear with my voice. Dear Professor Newman, that's a good way to start, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I'd say. I've just finished reading your ebook, which I downloaded from clockworkpirate.com. First, I'd like
good plug there. Well done.
Yeah. Yes. You can give me the fiver later. First, I'd like to thank you for making your expertise available in this format to us podcast listeners. I found Clockwork Pirate to be a practical and informative. I gave up link building some time ago after becoming frustrated, but I came away from reading your ebook with many new ideas and approaches, which I'm excited to test out. So I'd like to thank you for rekindling my enthusiasm for link building. Sorry, just clear my throat. In a previous podcast, you asked for questions from listeners, and I have one that's been floating around in my head for quite a few months. First, a bit of background. I am a Canadian importer and marketer of tangible consumer goods. Since I sell physical products, national boundaries are a major obstacle to doing business. Over the last few years, I've become annoyed with the small size of the Canadian market and have begun contemplating moving to the US and UK markets. It takes a fixed amount of time and effort to design, source, and develop marketing materials for a particular product. The US market is 10 times larger than Canada, and the UK market is at least 2 times the size. Sorry, I've got my commas in the wrong place. I hope that makes sense. So by marketing in all three countries simultaneously, I'm able to increase my market presence by 12 times without much additional work. So my question is about SEO for marketers who are operating in multiple countries. One thing I've learned about search rankings while serving the Canadian market is that it helps to use a country-specific domain name because Google will elevate your website in the localized search results. So while my competitors use .com domains and try to appeal to the whole world, I use .ca domains and tell Google through webmaster tools that I'm only targeting Canada. This signifies to both visitors and Google that I'm located in Canada, and as a result, I get higher search rankings and better conversion rates. So what I'm wondering is whether it makes sense to take the same web content and marketing materials and make 3 separate websites. One .ca website, one .com website, and one .co.uk website. Of course, by putting the same content on 3 different domains, I'm introducing a triplicate content problem, which might be bad from an SEO perspective. Also, I would be splitting incoming links across 3 domains, making it harder to build up links. On the other hand, by using country-specific domains, I would probably get better search rankings in those geographical markets, and also it would help to localize content and present it in a way that customers will be comfortable with. I think that customers will spend more time on a website if they know they are dealing with a business in physical proximity to them, as prices will usually be in their currency, shipping won't be too expensive, and they won't have to deal with customs and duties. So what would you do in this case? Would you put the same content on the three country-specific domains, or would you put it on one domain with subsections for customers in each market? Thanks for the advice, for your thoughts. Thanks in advance for your thoughts.
Brilliant. So yeah, no, very good at illustrating some of the quandaries of international SEO there. And one, you know, that we've been doing more and more multinational and multilingual SEO over the last year or so at Site Visibility. So one that is a common question and a common quandary, and you've kind of done a really good job of identifying the issues there. Now, if you're dealing with the kind of problem where you're going after multiple websites in multiple countries that are essentially using the same language, so Canada, America and England all speaking variations of English, it then becomes a bit more difficult. It's easy to understand. My advice normally is, if you're targeting different languages, you have a different website for them. So you put your .frs for France, your .des for Germany, and so on and so forth. That's the way that you structure them. Now, what do you do if you've got the same content? Now, my general preference is to have separate domains for separate countries, because you can override any hosting that you've got that might be all hosted in the US. And it kind of, like you say, performs better in those individual search engines. However, if you're using the same content, the duplicate content is going to far outweigh, the downsides of the duplicate content is going to far outweigh any of the upside of using the specific country domain. So unless, if you're going after Canada, the UK and America, and you're going to use separate websites, you've got to have entirely separate content. It's got to be rewritten, it's got to be localized, and it's got to be, build up their own links for each of those websites. So if it's about saving time and taking the content and effort that you've already produced to open yourself up to a slightly bigger audience, I would maybe go down the .com and have a /Canada/US/UK option there. But prefer the separate domains, but it requires more time and more resource to do that.
That's a surprisingly quick answer to such a long question.
Well, I think the reason it's a simple answer is because, you know, much of the whys and wherefores there are kind of explained in the question. And it's a tough one. And I think people will have generally realised this with the Q&As. Most times with something that's a more complex SEO issue or more complex internet marketing issue, it's very rarely a yes, no. There's no right or wrong. There's normally kind of whys and wherefores and weighing up the options. And if you've got the time to do it the right way, do it the right way. If you've not got the time to do it the right way, you know, you've got to do it in a not quite so perfect way.
Right, the next question is from David Garden from Australia, down under. I won't try and do an Aussie accent, but he has written it in a very Aussie way.
Okay.
I shall read it literally in my best verbatim. English accent. Verbatim. Good day, Kelvin, from the land of the convicts, Crocodile Dundee, Steve Irwin and kangaroos.
So sounds about accurate, yeah.
That must be Belgium then.
Yeah, Belgium.
I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of months. You provide a wealth of useful information, and I enjoy the relaxed manner in which Andy and yourself present. Well done.
We would read out questions if people weren't complimentary at the beginning. It just is quite nice that people tend to be. You know, if they were to say, I really don't like your show, but I'm asking a question anyway, we would still read them out. You know, it's not we only choose the people who are nice to us, honest.
David continues, I would like to know if you have had success with your pay with a tweet experiment linked to downloads of your ebook brackets, which, by the way, is excellent, apart from the grammar and spelling mistakes.
Oh, it's free. You can't complain about the odd grammatical mistake in it.
I am considering doing the same with my soon-to-be-released ebook. So I would like to learn from your experience. Thanks, mate. David Garden.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So just to recap, if you're a new listener, I released an ebook probably 4 months or so ago now, called Becoming a Clockwork Pirate, which was at clockworkpirate.com. It was about link building. Now, what was interesting about that was it was free, but it wasn't entirely free. It wasn't completely free. You couldn't just go there and download it. Now, normally what people do when they say things are free like that is they capture an email address. Well, that's not what we did in this case. We did a kind of, you get the book for free if you share it on Facebook or Twitter. And we used pay with a tweet initially, but switch to Cloud Flood at a later date afterwards, which essentially does the same thing. So it exchanges a social mention for a piece of a digital asset. Now, there were some interesting things that we learned in the process of that. Now, the first is, if you want to just get it out to as many people as possible, it probably isn't the best way of doing it. Now, it does work for an ebook. You know, my concern was, if you made it just a PDF that people could download, or a, you know, an EPUB file that they can read on their iPad, and it was free to download, no capture, no nothing, we didn't get anything from them, we're just hoping that they shared that naturally, you do have a bit of a problem, because I know for a fact that a good chunk of the people, the thousands of people that downloaded the book, not all of them are going to read it. Some of them probably going to start, not all of them are going to finish. Now, if you're then waiting for them to finish it before they then share it, it's going to hit a wall there, and they're not going to share it in the same way, shape or form. However, even though that tweet is it's not like asking £10 or £50 or whatever to download the book, it does stop people, and there is a bounce rate of people who go to the site and don't share it and don't download it. So it does act as a kind of an impair there. Now, the standard approach is the email one. And a lot of people use this kind of as a classic list building tactic, whereby you go, okay, you give something away for free, then you've got their email address, and then you can then either promote to them at a later date, or, you know, a lot of people in the kind of seedier ends of internet marketing use it to kind of then sell other courses and ebooks that cost lots of money that they're not worth, and that kind of thing as well. Now, I didn't want to go down that route. I'm doing this to share our knowledge and to promote the podcast and promote Site Visibility, the company I work for. So, we felt that it was better to kind of share it. And the pay of a tweet was good, because it meant that for every person who downloaded my book, potentially they were telling all of their followers on Twitter and Facebook. And that got us further. So it's kind of a weighing up of options and what your goals are. Make it entirely free. It could spread a lot wider. You could get tens of thousands of downloads I could have got potentially if it had got picked up. But it's a bit hit and miss as to whether people will actually share it or not. You don't know for definite. You have the same problem if you're taking an email list, but you get greater long-term value. So you might not get as many people downloading it as you would do if it was free. But once you've got their email address, there's potential. There's an opt-in there. You've got a permission-based list where you can kind of do all that, jazz with those people there. So there's a value to that. Now, this pay for tweet, I did it because I was interested to see what would happen. And it can work really well to virally spread an idea or concept. But you have to be prepared that you're losing people who don't have Twitter accounts, who don't have Facebook accounts, or who can't sign into Facebook if they're at work, say. You know, they can download your book, but they couldn't sign into Facebook or Twitter. There's pros and cons. And it was an interesting experiment, and one I probably would repeat. But it depends what your goals are. Is it to build a list? Is it to talk to as many people as possible? Or is it to kind of get your name known? And for me, it was getting my name known. So therefore, the pay-per-tweet model worked quite well.
What did the graph look like, Kelvin? The actual sort of... Was there a big sort of lump at the front and it sort of tailed off?
Yeah, I mean, it was there was a big peak over the first 3 or 4 days, tailed off quite quickly after that, because, like I say, it was the people... So every person who downloaded it shared it, which then led to more people. It was interesting how you can see kind of a cascade effect of that.
Yeah.
And there have been small spikes in the past afterwards where other people, like someone who's got some credibility downloads it, and then you get like a ripple effect from that. Big spike again when I did a big blog post on e-consultancy that sort of was based around the book as well, so that led to kind of quite a download. But what surprised me is the fact that, like, even now with no real active promotion of it, it still kind of gets downloads. And I suppose that must be podcast listeners doing that who go off and download it. But yeah, it's an interesting model. I think if I were to do it again, I'd probably, probably longer term the email list is useful. It's about what you're trying to achieve, and for me it was as much about spreading the knowledge contained within the book. And I felt, actually, personally, I don't like putting my email address into things. I'd prefer to put my Twitter details in. So
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare,
a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
For me, it seemed less, but different people have a different opinion on that.
And the URL again is
clockwork.com. I mean, a lot of the topics we cover in there are stuff that we've talked about in the podcast, but and it's interesting as well that I do think you do get a bias in people. So people that listen to podcasts perhaps are different people to who read blogs or read ebooks and that type of thing. So it's topics that we talk about, and with a lot of these things, if you're doing them for a living, you've got to be prepared to make experiments. And sometimes it works, sometimes it didn't. I think this one was kind of an interesting one. It's taught me that I think if you were doing a competition and to enter, they had to tweet something, and you get this a lot. I think the pay the tweet one could be a really good way of doing that.
Right, let's move on. Moving swiftly on. Another tome-like question, this time from Jed Felix.
Yes.
The subject is, Can I convince you to become a premium member? Hi, Kelvin. I have a question for you. How much time and effort should you spend on discovering what the best keywords are for your business if you don't feel as though you really fit into a particular niche? I'm currently rebuilding my website, implementing lessons learned over the last few years. I'm using, quote, alternative clothing brand, quote, on the current incarnation of my site. I want to expand that to, quote, UK-made alternative clothing brand, quote, for the rebuild, with the aim of differentiating myself from the mass-produced, brackets, and often cheap, brackets, alternative clothing that's out there. Some of my customers are from the fetish scene, others from the goth/cyberpunk scene, and I get people who are from no particular subculture buying from me too. However, my products are often out of the financial reach of the largely young demographic of the alternative clothing market, brackets, teenagers who are wanting to rebel or fit in with their peers, brackets. And I don't want to alienate people who are scared of the word fetish. Current analytics stats include 1,671 visits March-April, brackets 51% through search engines, 34% through referring sites, and the rest direct traffic, brackets, with a bounce rate of 56.1%. And one conversion through the website, brackets, plus another two generated through Facebook and more still through trading at events, brackets. I'm aiming on promoting the rebuilt website a lot more than I'm promoting the existing incarnation. The rebuilt site will include a lot more customer engagement features, brackets, for example, alpha user points to encourage my existing customer base to add content and also help drive traffic to my site, brackets. I'm also producing product videos. I'm going to start saying brackets because there are loads of brackets here. 30 seconds to a minute long that I will not only embed on the rebuilt site, but will also upload with links to the specific product pages to both YouTube and Facebook. I do a lot of direct marketing, face-to-face, at events that I trade at, and I'm aiming on having a MailChimp form QR code on my new flyers to encourage offline/online integration. I'm keywording each of my individual product pages on the rebuild site, and will be adding SEO'd articles on topics around alternative subculture and fashion, as well as working on, quotes, how to measure the female body, quotes, and, quotes, how to measure the male body, quotes, videos. Do you think I should stick with the UK-made alternative clothing brand? Do you think I'm heading in the right direction with my other strategies? Sorry for the brain dump. That's your department, isn't it, Kelvin? I hope there can be some useful content you can generate from my question for a site visibility podcast. Kind regards, Jed Phoenix of London, who I presume is from London.
Yes, yes. No, good question there, Jed. Now, I can see where you're coming from and trying to... You're concerned about associating the products that you're making particularly with a particular subculture that might alienate other potential customers there as well. So you wouldn't want to necessarily describe your clothes as fetish clothes or goth clothes or whatever it is there. But unfortunately, you have to be pragmatic about where the search volume actually is. Now, I would be, not having done the keyword research, but I would go into a tool like Google AdWords keyword tool and type in your term and see what the search volume is. Now, first of all, make sure you choose exact as an option rather than broad, because when broad's on, it kind of you know, makes connections to other keywords. And the two variations you were talking about, their UK alternative clothing and what was it? Alternative made
I've
clothing.
I've got to scan through the email to find it now.
I would be concerned with both of those, both the one you're currently targeting and the one you're going after, that I would be very surprised if there's more than, you know, dozens of people searching for that on a month-by-month basis. You need to go for terms where there's actually some significant search volume there. Now, it will make them more competitive, but you need to... We've been doing some... Graham, who comes on the show occasionally, has been doing some really interesting stuff with us at Site Visibility at the moment in terms of some predictive modelling. Because you can look at like what the search volumes are, and we've kind of then got a bit of a formula to make them look a bit more like what the search volumes actually are. Because Google overestimate by quite a substantial amount on those keyword phrases that they're making the suggestions of what the volume is. And then you can say, okay, well, if you're in position 10, you'd get this click-through rate. If you're in position 9, you get this click-through rate. And then almost then taking it to the next stage again. So in your case, Jed, you might know that that you get, you said you had a bounce rate of 50% there. So you say, okay, well, immediately 50% of the people who visit the site aren't going to do anything. So you then got the active visitors of the site. You then would know, okay, well, what the conversion rate is. And you probably might know what the average order value is. And you can start to say, okay, well, in order to make, you know, £1,000 a month from my website, I need to get this amount of purchases. And to get that amount of purchases, I need this amount of visitors. And to get that amount of visitors, I need to go after keywords that have this amount of search volume. And, you know, that would be the way that I would go. So my gut feel is that the subculture names and some of the keywords related to them, so like goth clothing or cyberpunk clothing or cyberpunk, and then individual products, I would have thought probably have the search volume there. And perhaps that will alienate a few of the people who aren't searching in that way, but you kind of need to go where the volume is. And that would be my concern about the keywords that you were suggesting there, that if there's not people searching for it, it doesn't matter how high you rank for it. You can rank number one for a phrase that no one's searching for, and it doesn't matter. It's better to rank 10 or 8 for a term that's got some volume, because then you will get some traffic as a consequence of that.
Okay, hope that was helpful, Jed. Right, moving on, a nice relatively short question here from Mark Lawrence. Hi Kelvin, hi Andy. I have a question about sitemaps that I wanted to run by you. I have a main website at www.mywebsite.com. That's not a real website, I think. And I have a WordPress website installed in a subfolder for my blog called www.mysite.com/blog. I've been using Google Analytics on the main website, and I thought it would work if I use the same code in the blog website. I'll know in a couple of days if this works, but what confuses me is how the sitemaps will work. My main website dynamically creates a sitemap, which I've added to my Google Webmaster Tools, and I wanted to know if by using a WordPress plugin sitemap generator, is it enough to also add this sitemap to the Webmaster Tools, or do I need to do something clever, like reference one from the other, for example. Once again, many thanks for all your podcasts over the years. I've learned so much from you guys, Mark. Now, didn't we have a very similar question?
It's a common query around how to handle sitemaps when you've got like two different types of site. The answer to that is that it is possible. The analytics one, you can use the same code and that'll be fine. He'll have known now because he asked the question a while ago, but that, you know, if anyone's interested, as long as it's all on the same domain and it's just subfolders, add the same code, and even if they're run on different content management systems, it's not a problem. Now, what you need to do here is, if you've got two different content management systems, both of which are automatically generating a sitemap that you can, an XML sitemap that you can upload to Google, that's okay. But what I would suggest is the simple solution to this is you create a XML sitemap that sits at yourdomainname.com/sitemap.xml, and it contains two pages. It contains a link to the one for the main site and the one for the blog site. And then that's the way that you do that, because there is actually a theoretical limit. I can't remember. I think it's 1,000 URLs, but don't quote me on that. That you can, if your page is bigger than that, you need to have multiple sitemaps anyway. So having two sitemaps, as long as they're both linked to from the location, is fine. So what I would do is have your two different sitemaps. One might be, so you'd have yourdomain.com/sitemap.xml, which links to two pages. One of those pages is yourdomain.com/main site map, .xml, and you link to that one, and that's an XML sitemap. And then you have the other one that's generated through the WordPress plugin. So does that sort of make sense, Andy? So you have...
I'm just trying to visualize it in my head, actually.
So you, the way it works is you just have almost like a contents page, and then those pages that fit under that there. And as long as Webmaster Tools knows where the contents page is, they'll go down and see the pages below that as well.
Cool.
So yeah, and a good thing to do, XML sitemaps. What I would say is, I don't know if I mentioned this when we were last talking about them, but it does give me a bit of a bugbear of mine, where people will go to like XML sitemap generator tools and put their site in, generate an XML sitemap, and say, hey, isn't that great? Now, all those tools have done is followed the links on your site like Google would have done. The only way that an XML sitemap can be useful to you and worth doing from an SEO perspective, i.e. to help you get pages indexed that are buried within the site that you can't find, is to use one that your content management system generates. So it needs to be one that's part of WordPress, or one that's part of the content management system that you're using, or generated by hand, with a list of pages that you've got, and you can hand code them. It's not a complicated markup language XML. It's actually really simple, even to the extent that I can kind of understand it, and I'm pretty useless at these kind of things. So don't just go to a sitemap generator, put in your URL, and rely on what that outputs, because that's not going to do any better than Google would have done anyway.
Interesting stuff. So are you saying then that the content management system is the only thing that truly knows where the pages are?
Well, if you created them with the content management system, they must be there in the database somewhere.
Yeah.
So you want to be generating it from your database rather than from your navigation, because if it's from your navigation and the page is orphaned or hidden away, then it's kind of like, oh, I wonder how I can tell Google how to do it better by using an inferior version of Google to determine what pages are there, and it just wouldn't work.
Oh, well, from getting carried away with sitemaps to getting carried away physically, we better call it a day there. that was a smooth segue.
Yeah, I like it. You should work in local radio, Andy.
Well, luckily I've got a face for radio, I've been told. By various
me too,
people.
Yeah, me too.
So that's it. So it's goodbye from me, Andy White.
And goodbye from me, Kelvin Newman.
And I apologise for making that noise there. That was me rubbing my laptop.
So should we just do some sound effects here as well?
And that's Kelvin just being silly with a glass of water. So, yes, goodbye from me and a goodbye from Kelvin, and we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.